I'm your announcer, DJ Shy John. This is Tuesday, August 13th, 2013. Now, first up in the news this morning, I have an op-ed for you from Live Science. This is entitled, Junk Food Subsidies Threaten American Health. Elliot Negan, Union of Concerned Scientists, August 7th. Ellen Negan is the Director of News and Commentary at the Union of Concerned Scientists, UCS. This article is adapted from one that appeared in the Huffington Post on August 7, 2012. Negan contributed this article to Live Science's Expert Voices, Op-Ed and Insights. Heart disease, stroke, and high blood pressure killed more than 750,000 Americans in 2011, the most recent year for data. And although there has been a steady decline in heart-related deaths since 1980, they still constitute nearly a third of all fatalities, making them the nation's number one killer. Many of those deaths can be attributed to what we eat. In other words, bite by bite, we're killing ourselves. Today, one in three Americans, 36.9%, have some form of heart disease, and the American Heart Association projects that some 116 million of us, 40.5%, will suffer from it by 2030. The price tag for treatment is enough to give you a heart attack. AHA predicts that over the next 20 years, the cost of cardiovascular medical care will triple from $273 billion in 2010 to $818 billion in 2030. It also will cost tens of billions more in lost productivity, which includes days missed from work and potential lost earnings due to premature death, jumping from $172 billion in 2010 to $276 billion by 2030. The good news is there is a relatively straightforward way Americans can avoid heart-related diseases, prevent more than 127,000 deaths a year, and save some $17 billion annually in medical costs, according to a new Union of Concerned Scientists report. The $11 trillion reward, how simple dietary changes can save lives and money, and how we get there. How? Eat more fruits and vegetables. That's right. If an apple a day keeps the doctor away, just think of what would happen if Americans ate as many as 9 to 13 servings, 4.5 to 6.5 cups of fruits and vegetables. The average American today only eats 4 to 5 servings a day. Joe and Jane average should be eating 9, based on a 2,000-calorie-a-day intake, according to federal dietary guidelines. If everyone got with the program, UCS calculates the economic value of the 127,000 lives saved from cardiovascular diseases every year at a whopping $11 trillion. Does 9 servings a day sound like a heavy lift? Well, only if you're buying food with money, I suppose. Well, consider this. If Americans ate just one more serving a day, one banana or a large carrot, we would save $5 billion annually in health care expenditures and prevent more than 30,000 heart-related deaths. That sounds hard to believe. Certainly, there are other things we can do to protect our hearts. Cutting down on fatty meats and sugary soft drinks comes to mind. Getting off our butts would help too, but three of the four AHA-endorsed diets, the Mediterranean-style diet, the DASH dietary approaches to stop hypertension diet, and a low-fat vegetarian diet such as those developed by Dr. Dean Ornish and Robert Pritikin, recommend eating more fruits and veggies. So what's stopping us, beside the fact that junk food is addictive? According to UCS, it's upside-down government policy. Go figure. Federal farm policies fork over hundreds of millions of dollars a year to subsidize commodity crops, mainly corn and soybeans, which are used for biofuels, livestock feed, and the basic ingredients in processed food. At the same time, farm policies offer few incentives for farmers to grow fruits and vegetables, discouraging production of the very staples federal dietary guidelines recommend. These perverse policies make Americans foot the bill twice. Once to subsidize commodity crops that wind up in junk food, and again to cover the skyrocketing cost of treating heart-related diet-related heart disease, stroke, and hypertension, said Jeffrey O'Hara, an agriculture economist with UCS's Food and Environment Program and the author of the recent report. Our federal food policy is literally making us sick and driving the economy further into debt. Since 1995, the federal government has spent $19.2 billion to subsidize corn sweeteners, corn starch, and soy oils. $19.2 billion since 1995. The building blocks of junk food, according to an annual report published by CALPIRG, CalPIRG, Apples to Twinkies, 2013, comparing federal subsidies for fresh produce and junk food. Apples are the only fruit or vegetable that benefits from a significant federal subsidy, the report found, but the $689 million apple growers received during the last 18 years is peanuts compared with commodity crop support. The report used the high-calorie Twinkie as its emblematic junk food because 17 of its 37 ingredients, including corn syrup, high-fructose corn syrup, vegetable shortening, and cornstarch, are subsidized based on subsidy outlays. CalPIRG calculated that the federal government has spent enough for each of America's 144 million taxpayers to buy 355 Twinkies between 1995 and 2012, nearly 20 a year. In comparison, apple subsidies during the same time period would cover the cost of only 9 apples per person, about half an apple a year. Grow more produce, grow more demand. USC's O'Hara offers two key recommendations in his report to address this problem. First, it's obvious that the United States needs to boost fruit and vegetable production. The sad fact is, if every American today decided to follow the federal dietary guidelines, the nation wouldn't have enough fruits and vegetables to meet the demand. To increase supply, O'Hara says the federal government should spend more on agricultural research, especially on plant breeding programs that produce higher yields and create new, more resilient varieties. Research funding for fruit and vegetable crops pales in comparison with what corn, soy, and other commodity crops get. Likewise, current U.S. farm policy prohibits commodity farmers who receive subsidies to plant fruits and vegetables, which makes no sense. And unlike commodity farmers, many fruit and vegetable growers, especially those who grow a variety of crops, can't get adequate crop insurance, another major disincentive. O'Hara's second recommendation focuses on doing a better job delivering that produce at an affordable cost to consumers, especially low-income Americans who are the hardest hit by cardiovascular and other diet-related diseases. According to a 2012 U.S. Department of Agriculture study, some 30 million Americans are living in poor neighborhoods more than a mile from the nearest supermarket. O'Hara would like to see more public incentives for farmers' markets, supermarkets, small grocery stores, and distribution hubs for locally grown food, which would not only make fruits and vegetables more available, but also provide a market for regional fruit and vegetable farmers. We need smarter policies that invest in farmers' markets, farm-to-school programs, and other programs that would make fresh produce more available and affordable for low-income families, O'Hara says. We need to start thinking about eating fruits and vegetables as an investment in public health. Smarter investments would improve public health and reduce the cost of health care at the same time. In April, Senator Sherrod Brown, Democrat Ohio, and Representative Shelley Pingree, Democrat Maine, introduced identical bills in Congress that would expand consumer access to fruits, vegetables, and other healthy foods and promote business and marketing opportunities for farmers and ranchers. Among other things, the legislation would provide $20 million annually for farmers' markets and local and regional food enterprises to help defray the cost of processing, distribution, storage, and marketing. It would also provide funding for the federal food stamp program, now called the Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program, SNAP, to enable low-income consumers to buy healthy food from local farmers. The Brown-Pingree bill includes sensible, low-cost investments that would drag our antiquated farm policy into the 21st century by addressing one of our most pressing social problems, said O'Hara. If Congress cares about saving lives, it will adopt the provisions of the Brown-Pingree bill in the upcoming farm bill. Well, we'll see about that. I don't think they did they? And now it's time once again for the Harper's Weekly Review, August 13th, 2013. The U.S. government reopened 18 diplomatic posts that it had closed across the Middle East after allegedly intercepting details of a planned attack in communications between al-Qaeda leader Ayman al-Zawahiri and al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula leader Nasser al-Wuhayshi. The U.S. consulate in Lahore, Pakistan, remained closed, as did the U.S. embassy in Yemen, whose government claimed that it had, and had not, thwarted an al-Qaeda plot to take over an oil terminal, blow up pipelines, and kidnap foreign workers. Everybody is feeling that there is something going on, said a human rights advocate in Sana'a, but nobody knows what. Defense attorney advising Major Nidal Hassan, who is representing himself in his trial for killing 13 people at Fort Hood Army Base in 2009, asked to be relieved of their duties because they believed Hassan was surreptitiously seeking the death penalty. This has got to be torture, said a former Army prosecutor, particularly if you're opposed to capital punishment. The White House canceled a planned summit between Barack Obama and Russian President Vladimir Putin. They slipped back into Cold War thinking and Cold War mentality, said Obama during an appearance on The Tonight Show. I continually say to them and to President Putin, that's the past. Mikhail Gorbachev announced that he wasn't dead. The White House press corps asked no questions about reforms to National Security Agency surveillance practices at a press conference call to discuss reforms to NSA surveillance practices. At a speech by Obama in Phoenix, the audience interrupted to sing happy birthday to the president while protesters outside shouted, he's a 47% Negro, and sang bye-bye black sheep. He's divided all the races, said a demonstrator. I hate him for that. Curiosity sang happy birthday to itself on Mars. In Jonglei, South Sudan, 328 people were reported to have been killed during 2 weeks of fighting between the army, rebel soldiers, and rival tribes. In Kanduga, Nigeria, suspected members of Boko Haram shot and killed 44 people while they prayed at a mosque. In Nangarhar province, Afghanistan, a remote-controlled bomb killed 7 women and 7 children as they visited the grave site of a family member. In Quetta, Pakistan, a suicide bombing at a police officer's funeral killed at least 30 people. In Adra, Syria, government troops killed 62 members of an opposition militia in a desert ambush and left their bodies in the sand. And across Iraq, a string of car bombs detonated on Eid al-Fitr, killing at least 61. We had a terrible day, said the owner of a shoe store whose windows were shattered. That was supposed to be nice. Authorities rescued California teenager Hannah Anderson and killed her abductor, James Lee DiMaggio, in Idaho's Frank Church River of No Return Wilderness. Guess it was true for him. Interim Egyptian President Adli Mansour declared that international diplomacy had failed in Egypt. The King of Morocco retracted a pardon inadvertently granted to a Spanish pedophile. An American surgeon vacationing in Florence accidentally severed a finger from a statue of the Virgin Mary. Breton farmers smashed tens of thousands of eggs to protest their cheapness. Boston gangster James Whitey Bulger was found guilty of 31 racketeering charges that encompassed the murders of 11 people. Rat-a-tat-tat, Whitey, shouted a woman in the courtroom. The New York Times sold the Boston Globe for 6% of its 1993 purchase price. And Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos purchased the Washington Post for 1% of his net worth. A recording was leaked of a conversation between a former Ron Paul aide and Jesse Benton, who worked for Paul's 2012 presidential campaign and is now managing the re-election campaign of Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican Kentucky. Between you and me, said Benton, I'm sort of holding my nose for 2 years. Take heed. American hog farmers were struggling to contain porcine epidemic diarrhea virus, which has killed thousands of piglets across 16 states. Thames Water completed the removal of a 16.5-ton mound consisting of food grease and wet wipes from a sewage drain in a suburb of London. We reckon it has to be the biggest such berg, said the company's waste contract supervisor in British history. A hamburger made from lab-grown beef was eaten in London. It's close to meat, said one of the testers. I would have said if it was disgusting. Germans were found to have the most organized fridges in Europe. Scientists hypothesize that Middle East respiratory syndrome, which has killed nearly half of the 94 people infected, might be transmitted via contact with one-humped camels. A 69-year-old English woman named Penny Freeman and her brother were trapped in their home for 4 days by a family of seagulls that pecked on their windows and vomited on them when they tried to leave. The Edinburgh Fringe Fest held a ginger pride rally, and a film society in Pordenone, Italy, discovered Too Much Johnson, Orson Welles' first professional film. Swedish men were advised against skinny dipping after a paku fish was discovered in Orison Sound. They bite because they're hungry, said a Danish ichthyologist, and testicles sit nicely in their mouths. Woo! This news by Ryan Liebenthal. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, I have reached the end of the Kill Radio Weekly News and Review. So in the meantime, in the coming week, people, please be kind to one another and stay out of the news.